You're listening to Make the Game with Matt Hackett.
Welcome to Make the Game. My name is Matt Hackett, and I'm here today with Jonathan Hackett. What a pleasure. My own older brother. Thanks for being here, bro.
Appreciate it. Having me.
Good to have you. What do you prefer these days? What do you have, like a professional Jonathan?
No.
Johnny Boy?
So at EA, yeah, Johnny Boy. At EA, everybody called me Hackett because EA had a very kind of like, you know, bro culture kind of thing going on, but it didn't bother me. So everybody called me Hackett.
I like Hackett. Matt, honestly, how many Matts have you known? And like too many. And the Hackett's, I like Hackett. No one ever called me Hackett.
It's a good point. Yeah. Like I don't necessarily go for John that much. When I came up here for a while, people call me Jonathan up here, which I was like, okay, fine. Hey, I like Jonathan. But then there's a guy from a guy who I worked who worked with us for a while named Steven, who decided to start calling me Jono one day, and Jono stuck. Yeah, I've always been like, don't call me Johnny. I don't want anybody calling me Johnny, and no one's ever tried it or anything. No, that's gross, Johnny. Give me
no one's ever tried. Just try it.
Yeah. I give you one of the, you see this? Give me one. They used to call this the hammer. That's what they get. They get the line from the abyss.
The hammer.
They get a knuckle sandwich.
James Cameron call out already. I thought that'd be later in the cast.
Oh, we can.
I know.
We'll go off on that later. No, but the Jono stuck.
Yeah. Anyway. Real quick tangent while we're talking about names is I had one too where when I was on Facebook, I was trying to like not be on Facebook, and I went by Mateo Sanchez instead of Matt Hackett. Mm. And so Andrea had friends she had only through Facebook, so they honestly thought my name was Mateo, and they would call me that, and I never corrected them because I thought it was funny. I'd also have like Lyft drivers call me that and stuff. So we're going to get into some actual game development, I promise. This is just some brotherly discourse here. I think we have some really interesting parallels. You know, we're from the same family, so we have a lot in common, but we also have a lot of differences, especially career-wise, right? So I was looking for something a little more meaty to jump into, but I think it would help to get to know you a little bit because you, my friend, are a little bit of a hermit, especially compared to someone like me who is obnoxiously out there and trying to, get my company's name out there and whatnot. Yeah. Why don't we walk through your career, which is a cool one, longer than mine in games, and starts in indie, right? Like, well... I would say independent.
Well, it started off in mods. Technically, I don't know that I. Well, the first time I was getting it. Sorry if I'm getting weird ambient sounds.
It's just the ghosts.
Yeah. Family's house
is a little haunted.
Still bumping around. And someone's banging pots and pans.
10:30 night's a perfect time to cook.
Apparently. So started off in mods. I think I was doing mods, and I was doing the kind of some of the online involvement stuff technically before I got my first game job. My first job at an actual game company was, I believe, 97. wow. It's 1997. Thank you very much. Right.
Yeah, that not quite that old.
My first actual job officially at a game company on the dev team was in 2001, early 2001. When people ask me how long I've been in the industry, I don't know, it depends. I'll either say 21 years or, you know, about 25 years depending, it's somewhere in there. It's like whether or not you count 30. That initial right. Although with some people it is like, well, yeah, it's like I got in games when you were born, or like, you know, something when you get to my age and you start to work with people who like you're literally old enough to be their dad, that's a little alarming. So you're not quite there yet, I imagine, but give it a few more years. Well, no, I mean, technically I mean, I'm 48. So technically if I'm working with somebody that's like in their early 20s, I'm like, I could be your dad. Okay. You'll be there pretty soon. Like, yeah, right. I mean, if you start working with people in their early 20s, you're going to be like, yeah, I mean, technically, I'm talking technically, I could be your dad. Not that you were
working with people. John, I'm a solo developer.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you. Yeah. I actually work in studios with folks as opposed to, which is weird actually. Multiple talking people. About, you know, talk about being a hermit, but of the two of us, I'm the one, like, I actually interact with way more people every day than you do. I just don't do it like online in a way where I have to kind of like gather or like seek out attention. It's just part of my job.
Right.
Versus your job is sitting there alone and basically just talking to Andrea all day or your dogs.
Don't forget the weeping and being so, so lonely.
That's right.
Also in my job description that I wrote for myself, for my company. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Quietly so sobbing.
Think, yeah. Yeah. We have a subscribe and save for tissues. No, I think that your entry point into the games industry is pretty interesting because correct me if I'm wrong, it was Quake came out and lit the world on fire, baby. Right? Like yeah. Quake was really amazing, and you kind of capitalized on that. You had a Quake clan going, is what they were called back in the day.
Well, I didn't capitalize on it, which is the frustration looking back on it. But
you
like
should have spun it into a Quake empire that lined your coffers, but you had a thriving community. You just the business lockdown or something.
Yeah, I had zero business awareness. And if I wasn't just a dumb kid working in retail at the time, yeah, I would have thought to maybe do something with it. But yeah, so Quake Test came out, and I think it was 96. I think it was 96 that Quake Test came out, and it was the first 3D offering from id. You know, I think before that there were some 3D engine stuff, you know, notably like Descent. The first Descent game was actual like true 360 and all three axes kind of thing.
I played it with a flight controller. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Remember those?
Yeah, but Quake Test came out, and I, at the time when it first came out, it still had that kind of like medieval vibe. And Romero was still at id, and it had like an axe and it had monsters and stuff in it. And I thought that it was a cool, I looked at it as like a role-playing game, and I thought it would be cool if people actually formed teams and had like, and called themselves a name and came up with like team colors and actually would like fight against each other. And I called them clans. And I said, these are Quake clans and they're going to fight each other. And yeah, I had whoever my, this was, I was living in New York, up north of like, in the like White Plains area up north of the city. And
up in the woods, no tall buildings, right?
No, not in the, well, no tall. It was definitely the suburbs. Like it was nice suburbs up north of, it was in the White Plains area. But all I had was an ISP. And so ISPs back then, we used to give you a little tiny bit of like server space, and the URLs were like, it was like, you know, ISP.com/squiggle and your username, you know, it was like tilde username. And that was your web page. Cause back then, like prohibitively expensive to get an actual .com domain. Like that was not something that the average person could do back then. So that's what you had to use.
Right.
So yeah, I made a quick, just basic HTML page called Quake Clans, and I emailed the news sites at the time, which were like Blues News and Scary Sugar Shack and probably like Quake World or something, and said something like, some little spiel about like, oh, Quake Test is coming out and people should make teams and they should email this address about like what you want tell me what your top and your bottom colors are. Cause you're at Quake One, you could set the colors separately. And I was like, tell me what the name of your clan is. And then tell me what the abbreviation for that is, because your name, your username would have to be bracket. Like my clan was the Red Dragons, and we had to have, so you had bracket RD bracket, close bracket, and then your name, then your username.
Right. Right.
And you had to email me a logo. And so I, for like, I don't know, it wasn't long, for like a couple months, I like manually managed this page of taking, I'd get home from my retail job in the evenings, check my email. update the page with these logos and descriptions and stuff, and like their contacts so that people could email them to join their clan or like whatever. It was stupid and it didn't go anywhere. And very, very quickly, my ISP, it got enough attention that my ISP contacted me and was like, hey, knock it off. Like you're eating up way too much bandwidth to cut that shit off. We're going to start charging you. And hey, life goals. So, yeah,
that's an achievement right there.
Yeah. So I cut it. I stopped it. And, cause like I said, dumb kid, I didn't know what I was doing. So I had to just kind of stop. And, but eventually other sites picked up basically doing the same kind of thing. And then I think, you know, at some point it got folded. It started getting folded into other games and stuff. And I'm not saying that I didn't create the idea.
You're responsible for like creating that. I understand. You invented the idea of a guild.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, no. As far as I know, I'm the first person who coined like actual Quake clans and decided to call them clans versus, I don't know, versus guilds or whatever else. So I don't know.
But well, whatever. You should have copyrighted that.
I mean, in retrospect, yeah. If could've I could go a back, nickel. I would have been like, hey, knucklehead, like do something about this. like this is actually, people actually like the idea. You should do something with it. So, but no, I didn't. And then I just let that go and I didn't think about it. And then later on, like a year later, I met my wife and then we moved to Boston and then Seattle. And once I got out of Seattle, I started doing mod work on like Unreal Tournament mods and stuff like that. And out in Seattle, I worked for Sierra Online. And I also worked for Humongous Entertainment, which was like a kids game. And up there I was doing tech support and I was doing web stuff.
Right.
And just working at a game company and trying to ask around and like, you know, what is game art? What was game art back then? Like, or like in the late 90s, right? It was still like the 3D stuff was very rudimentary. It was still a lot of like sprite based stuff. And there wasn't when we went to school, there wasn't like game programs. There wasn't 3D modeling programs. A lot of that stuff just didn't exist. Right. So I didn't know, I was like right before that stuff started to take off. So I had to kind of fumble my way through it, figure out how to do that stuff. And eventually I fell into, using photo based, like taking my camera around Seattle and taking pictures of stuff and then going home in the evening and doing, making them tileable in Photoshop and textures. Stuff. And that's, yeah, texturing is great. And my first job was as a texture artist. Like that was my first actual job as in the game industry. I worked at a company as a texture artist. And then the next job I was environment artist. And then I started working at EA as an environment artist and then senior environment artist and then lead environment artist. And yeah, that led to, I'm rambling on and on here.
I forgot that there was more of a gap when you were doing the Quake Clan stuff, because in my head, I remembered that you were kind of doing some homegrown things that kind of led to some actual work eventually. And I guess that was a longer road than I remember, where you did that stuff. And then you also did tech at Sierra Online. But what I think is interesting is that you and I both had these careers where, you know, we grew up in the Midwest. And there nobody was like, there's no game development programs. Like you were saying, there were no, you know, groups, nobody was making games. You could barely find any books. The internet was barely really a thing, right? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. it wasn't the, like online now you trip over open source game engines, free game engines, paid game engines, tutorials, videos. You know, we didn't have that benefit, back then. So anyway, you and I both, I think we would like inch our careers just kind of just like tiptoe in the direction of games. Like I know that's true for me working at Yahoo. And then there was a startup, Raptor, which it wasn't making games, but it was, you know, making websites just like Yahoo was, but it was about games and it was in the direction of games. And that's where I met Jeff and we started LDG. And that's how, you know, my career started, is because I was just kind of, you know, pointed in the direction of games. And I feel like that was true for you too, where you weren't yet a game developer, right? But you were like doing more and more game adjacent things, like the further you would get, right? You know, cyber
game adjacent is a good way to put it.
Yeah. Game adjacency, yeah. And I think that's a good career tip, right? For anyone who's trying to get into games, is baby steps are okay. And even when you're doing something where you're like, well, it's not totally, like sometimes it's okay, right? Like sometimes you need to just get what you want and not make any concessions. But other times it's okay to kind of like just squeak your way in that direction, because eventually you'll get there.
I feel like it's especially true of wanting to get into art, game art at the time, because like I think it's been for a while. It's been I think even when I was working on Sierra Online, it was kind of like, if you could get into like QA and testing and stuff, that was kind of a way to get your foot in the door. But that would usually lead to design or production, right? Like that wouldn't lead to, it was sort of like, how do you show somebody like, hey, I can actually make concept art or UI art or texture art or something like that. There was not as clear cut of a path back then, or at least there wasn't one that I was aware of, because like you said, there wasn't a roadmap at the time. It was, we had to kind of fumble around in the dark a little bit, or at least I did, in order to figure out like, how do I get into this? And also I had to do a little bit of, just exploration of myself. Like, well, what do I want to do? And like looking at games and like what constitutes these games, and how do you contribute to this stuff visually, and when what's going on, like what is this?
I think you and I were both interested in movies earlier on, like you went to cinematography school for a spell. Maybe someday, right? Games are awesome.
Games, right? We've always been interested in visual media stuff, like
I think
we've played games our entire lives, and it's kind of like it's been video games have been a through line for my entire life. I can't imagine life without games. Ever since, you know, dad got us an Atari 2600, you would have been a toddler, I think, when dad brought home the first, you've got a Robbie robot behind you. I remember getting that. We lived on Timothy Lane. And dad brought home from a work trip that he won in some kind of raffle. He brought home it was the whole kit and caboodle Nintendo Entertainment System. It had Robbie. It had the light gun. It had it had Gyromite and Duck Hunt. And I guess whatever the first Mario pack in was there. So like it had the whole thing. Like we were very fortunate and we had that. Mm-hmm. And it was like, that was like world changing. You know, Atari 2600 is one thing. Like, definitely played the crap out of that, so much that I had like the blisters on my hand from those stupid ass joysticks. But
those were terrible.
Yeah, the NES was like the beginning of just a thing that has a thing that has not stopped. It's so interesting to be able to remember that, right? Like my kids have just grown up with iPads and games and stuff, and they just exist. The internet has just existed. Like remembering it, you feel like a fossil when you think about this stuff, because it's like, I remember that when this stuff started. I'm not super ancient. I wasn't like, you know, back when computers were the size of like a room or something. We're not quite that old, but you know, still.
I mean, we've pretty much seen the whole spectrum in our lives, right? Because your kids are born and games. What did games look like when your first kid was born? Like, what's the worst looking? You know what I mean? Like, where was the technology at? What was it, PS2 or 3 or? Definitely had 3D.
My first kid was born in 2008, which was the year, I think. Was that the year we shipped Dead Space 1? I think it was. She was a development baby on Dead Space 1. That's PS3 and 360. They were born into that generation.
Like, if that's your first game looks like Dead Space, let's say the first time you ever see a video game, you see Dead Space. I just cannot imagine that, because the first time I ever saw a video game, I think it was Tanks, where tank is like Pong, seven or eight pixels.
Ridiculous.
It was exciting because it was the only technology we had, and literally anything moving on the screen that you could move yourself, any interaction was amazing, but it also didn't look like much. I recently watched that Adventure postmortem. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. It's great. The original game for Atari. And then, like, you know, the joke is that the dragon looks like a duck. Get this stuck right. It does. And these days, you know, like in Dead Space, like that's very, very cool looking. Hey, you know, Dead Space, that might be the first time I'll ever talk about a game that your average gamer might have heard of. That's an interesting one. That's one of your touchstone career games, right? Single-handedly created Dead Space franchise by yourself?
Stop it. No. I was an environment artist on Dead Space. I don't even remember if I was senior. I think I might have been promoted to senior by the time we shipped that, but
nice.
But yeah, I was an environment artist on that. That's the one. What's funny is that, like, in my whole career, that's still the one that people, like, when they, if someone mm-hmm. sees my whole resume, they're kind of like, oh, you worked on Dead Space? And I'm like, yeah, that was 13 years ago or something now. And what's really weird now is that they're doing a remake of Dead Space.
I think remake years old. I see.
I'm remake years old. I think it's EA Montreal is making it. And and a bunch of the original devs from the original Dead Space are making, I'm going to get the name wrong. That project, what is it? Callisto or something. They're the guys at Striking Distance Studios. A lot of really good guys.
Triple A, I don't know it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I'm kidding. I know some. I know Double A. How about that? I know two of the three A's.
Double A. Yeah, but no, Dead Space is the one that gets my first shipped game was this guy right here, Alter Echo on PlayStation 2. Yeah.
I was working retail when that came out. I had to sell people. I was working at Toys R Us when that still existed. It does not anymore. Rest in peace, Jeffrey the Giraffe. But I was working when people.
It still exists here in Canada.
Really? Mm-hmm. You still have Toys R Us, eh?
We do. No, we still have bookstores. There are, like, bookstores and stuff.
Oh, we have bookstores.
Yeah.
Come on. We got Barnes & Noble. We have Amazon stores. Amazon's starting to take over the world.
Amazon stores. Oh, my God.
In LA, there's the last bookstore in the world. That's a cool bookstore.
Well, better be with a name like that.
Yeah, really. The lamest bookstore ever. what were we talking about?
Yeah, that? So Alter Echoes, that was my first, and I still have a box. We got a really nice foil cover for it and everything. It was really cool. And then THQ, as soon as we shipped it, THQ shut us down. That was an independent studio called Outrage Games in Ann Arbor, Michigan. A lot of really great guys who are still in the industry are still out there working in high profile jobs at high profile companies. That company spawned a lot of cool talent. There was a lot of cool talent that was collected there, and those guys were great. I love the level of those guys. The game I mentioned, Descent, earlier. The studio that made Descent was called mm-hmm. Parallax Games. Parallax Games split into two companies, Outrage Games in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and then Volition down in Champaign-Urbana, very near where we grew up. Only what, 2 or 3 hours, I think, from where we grew up. Good guys down there in Volition too, guys and gals. So what was I saying? So that was my first console title, and then that awesome. They got shut down. So then I moved out to California. Worked in Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz, awesome place to live. If you get the chance to live in Santa Cruz, do it. Sweet surfing town. I loved the year that I spent there.
There's a big indie scene in Santa Cruz. At least there's one big indie dev there.
Is there?
Yeah, Edmund McMillan, Binding of Isaac developer, Super Meat Boy. Right, have you heard of either of those, my brother?
Yes.
Yes,
I haven't played. I have to admit, I have not played. Wait, sorry. What was the other one? Binding of Isaac and what?
Super Meat Boy.
Oh yeah. Of course.
Okay.
Super Meat Boy is way too intense for me. I'm not. Oh, your camera just cut out.
Yeah, it did. That's fine.
Super Meat Boy is way too intense for me. I do not have the. I don't know. I don't have the spirit. I don't have it in my soul to play those like super precise, really difficult games.
I don't either, except for Spelunky, and I have all the room in my heart for Spelunky. I guess that's why. That's why I don't have room for Super Meat Boy. Much room.
Because it's already been taken up, like your whole 99% of your heart's taken over with Spelunky.
Yeah. There's a little room for Grails.
Yeah. So I worked on a game that never got picked up, and also worked on some multiplayer maps for the much hated follow-up to GoldenEye called GoldenEye Rogue Agents. Nobody played it. Everybody hated it. But that was for EA. So when that studio closed down and EA acquired, they didn't acquire the studio, but they came down and basically poached a whole bunch of people from the studio. So in 2005, then I went up the peninsula and worked at EA, and I worked there until, aside from a short stint where I went over to Sledgehammer Games to contribute a little bit to Modern Warfare 3, although I left before that game shipped. But aside from that stint at Sledgehammer, I worked at EA / Visceral Games until 2016.
Long time, right?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that was basically 11 years. I mean, it was the timing. I screwed up the timing because I didn't, it like I screwed up so that I didn't get sabbaticals either when I was there, and then I left before I got a sabbatical, and then I was gone just long enough so that the sabbatical didn't just like carry over. So I screwed myself in a bunch of ways by moving around.
Wait, EA offers sabbaticals?
Mm-hmm.
How long are sabbaticals there?
I think it's like at the time anyway, I don't know, and it probably changed from studio to studio, but at the Redwood Shores campus there, it was like, if you're there for 7 years, then you get like 7 weeks off, but almost 2 months off. So, you know, pretty cool. Wow. Pretty cool.
I mean, by American standards, that's pretty
good. That's a lot. Yeah.
American standards are like, oh, you're sick? Well, can you work while you're sick? Vacation? Be sure you're answering emails from Cancun.
Yeah. Well, in America, it was like, oh, congratulations, your wife had a baby on Monday. Cool. So we'll see you on Wednesday then?
Tuesday. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, great.
Fantastic. I love it here.
Yeah. And then in 2016, I moved up to Canada and been here ever since at a, you know, I talked about this last time. I don't really want to name drop my current studio because I'm still there. And by the way, I'm not representing them in any way, shape, or fashion today. So I don't really want to talk too much about that. But as you can see from this right here and the sort of the poster on the wall and maybe some of this up here, like you could probably figure out where that is. But yeah, I work in VR, which as I've been thinking about it, it was kind of like, I considered it sort of like I wanted to shift my career, but actually it's been a huge shift. Like getting into VR development versus flat screen game development was a big shift, a big learning curve in every way. And I've been doing it now for 5.5 years and I love it, and I don't want to leave it, but it's wildly different. And since coming up here, I've done basically art lead, acted as art director, and now I'm game director on something. And it's they've been very good to me. I love it here. And I love Canada. Yay, Canada.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for part two of our hour-long discussion where John and I talk more about the differences between AAA and indie. Hey, thank you so much for the kind emails and audio messages you've been sending. They're in the queue and we'll get to it soon. You can send me your own audio message via anchor.fm. And I put a wish list up of dream gear for Make the Game, stuff like microphones and lenses to make the show better. I normally never would have thought to do that, but back in the day, one very special Lost Cast listener hooked us up with a decade of amazing gear. Thank you, friend. I'm literally speaking into one of those microphones. So send me a piece of gear if you want the show to level up, or if not, other ways you can help the show. Go buy my book, How to Make a Video Game All by Yourself. If you got the time and inclination, kindly rate it 5 stars. Thank you so much. You are being played out by Space Ambience by Alexander Nakarada. And now it's time for you to go make the game.
Scraggle.
See, I want to make sure to get this.